Well, this is Scott Poley with the Out of the Woods Threat Hunting Podcast. I'm here at the Information Security Summit in Cleveland, joined by Arun D'Souza. Arun, do you mind kind of introducing yourself and also kind of giving people a little bit of your backstory of how you got to where you are today and what that journey looks like?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I came to the United States in the late 80s and I got my master's and PhD at Vanderbilt University in chemical engineering. And my graduate work focused on control systems for boiler plants. The reason I'm mentioning that is two things. One is the fact that it got me into the computer automation and sort of manufacturing execution system arena, which later on I did start in when I came to corporate IT. But more importantly than that, it taught me a very valuable life skill, is that the ability to work with people from all walks of life. Because truthfully, many of the plant operators and, you know, even the plant director are all guys from the Navy and Marines and stuff of that nature. And I was this young man from India and I had to grow up fast. I had to work with them, right? So there was that. And then, of course, when I graduated, I moved on first to a job, which is sort of a dual role between sort of an IT leader and an engineering manager in a company in Canada, a smaller one. And then I got my MCSC and MCSC plus internet later when those things were coming out. And I pivoted in more into IT and global infrastructure, intranets and things of that nature, and continuing with manufacturing execution system for a little while. And then at 2000, the company I was in was in a joint venture.
Okay.
And they actually had an integration initiative to bring the company together. I was on three work streams. And reason I mentioned that is because when that all that was over, I was invited to become the first CISO of the company because they noticed that I was able to work well with people and navigate the cultures across the globe. And if you ever heard of being thrown feet first into the fire, yeah, well, absolutely. So that was kind of what happened there. But embrace challenges. I learned that also during my PhD. So I built a strat plan, built a multi-phase program to completely conduct a network infrastructure and security transformation that actually is in two parts. The first part involved migrating to the latest version of Active Directory, my baptism to identity, which is one of my passions. I'll be talking about it later today.
Okay.
As well as, consolidations, backup, and so on, and security delegation. Second phase was taming the rogue network to network optimization and QoS. That project is really very, very important in my life for another reason as well, because when I did the business case for the first part, my business case was taken by my boss to the board, and somehow your voice gets lost, right? And the board actually agreed to fund it as long as they gave me half the money. So now I had two choices, either quit or or find a solution, right?
Right.
So I talk a lot over the years about a phrase called the power of federation that I learned then. So I thought to myself, what can I do? So I reached out to different partners, suppliers, and with all of them said, hey guys, there's a big win here. It's a great story. There's something in it for all of us. Help me.
Right.
Right. And they all did. I mean, it's crazy to me when I remember how much discounts they gave me and things like that, or use tiered pricing. And, the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, when that phase one was completed, I still finished under budget with the 50% cut.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Because people helped me.
Right.
So I learned a very important lesson that, as they say in common parlance, better together, help each other out. And so that's kind of become my calling card. I've been very much in part of this security company and community, I should say, and helping others or getting help from others, all those stuff. So that was like in, around 20 years ago. And then I got into risk management. I was a CIO for a little while. And then I built a second security program, another auto company, but this one I built an integrated security and privacy program. Along the way, I've developed a lot of areas of interest in no particular order: identity management, cloud computing, data protection, zero trust, IoT security, and the like. And thing I remember about my now 20-year journey as a CISO is the friends that I made in the industry.
Yeah, people are very significant as far as like what I've learned through my journey as well, just being a practitioner and as also in leadership, is I still go back to the people that I worked with to have those, you know, important conversations and get ideas and solutions and things like that. So I definitely appreciate the community. It's a great community in cybersecurity in general. I did notice, you know, the Hall of Fame of CISO, right? You got that honor. With all your experience in being a CISO or a CIO, and then you're also an advisor in many capacities as well. Was there a common challenge that you saw with all these different organizations that you can speak to, or did every organization kind of have unique problems?
The problems are unique, but the way you tackle them is pretty much the same.
Okay.
Step number one is you need to build relationships.
Yeah.
And one relationship at a time with key stakeholders, whether they're peers or seniors to you in the company, but as well enrolling and enlisting people across the length, depth, and breadth of the business. For example, I had what I call the Security Ambassadors Network, and we used to have every 2 weeks a call, which was called the Federation call, believe it or not. And keeping everyone in the know, people from all walks of the business. Relationships is number one. It's not a one-time thing. You know, you have to keep working at it and even going to each department quarterly or monthly for their tolerance, traveling across the globe, being executive coach and things like that, and helping them understand how they can help you, how we all together can mitigate business risk. So that's first. The second is, as you know, Scott, cybersecurity is all about navigating the fine balance between value protection and value creation.
Right.
Right. And that is a hard job. So the reason I mentioned that is because the thing that's most important is you have to be able to embrace change and fearless change.
Yeah.
Because things keep coming at you left, right, and center. I don't think there's a single CISO in the world that says they have a 9-to-5 job. Is that true? Right. So in fact, you have to embrace change. But it's not just embracing change for change's sake. It's the ability to actually harness that trifecta of people, process, and technology to help you like win beneath the wings of your program to drive that change forward. The third thing is to build alliances, right? Now I'm talking about not just the relationships inside the company, the alliances with vendors, partners within the industry, because like I mentioned earlier, they can help you with tools and competitive pricing. But also alliances across the industry, but that's where you go and join organizations such as the Cloud Security Alliance or the Women's Security Alliance, things of that nature. Because what happens out there is, you know, people help you, you can help them, and you can keep the dialogue going. And the last thing that I would say is, you know, it's very, very important to embrace cost optimization. Mind you, I'm not saying cost reduction. That doesn't help anybody, right?
Yeah.
But cost optimization, always trying to find opportunities to achieve that. As an example, 3 or 4 years ago, we had the VPN. And I really didn't care for it because it was arcane technology and also limited by performance problems because of the devices.
Yeah.
And we went from the VPN to zero trust network access. And in fact, it's through that, we were able to minimize enterprise risks further, avoid some nation state attacks in the nick of time that happened with the same VPN we had, very lucky there, and as well as really strengthen the enterprise. But back to the point of save a lot of money.
Right.
So when you can minimize risk and save money and power that change forward, balancing value and creating value, everybody wins.
So you mentioned zero trust, and that's always an interesting topic for me because looking backwards when cybersecurity was kind of being applied to a lot more organizations, I feel like the common mindset, whether they could achieve it or not, was always to kind of like only allow what should be allowed from a lot of perspectives, which was kind of what zero trust is about, right? So do you feel like talking about zero trust today is really a reinvention of that wheel? Or do you feel like there's something new that we kind of add in that conversation when we actually talk about zero trust today?
If I may ramble on for a minute, but yeah, please excuse me for that. I've actually met John Kinderwag along the way at one point in time. But when zero trust first came out, it was very fascinating to me. Because back in the day, when people worked mostly in the office, right, there was this notion of castle and moat. So say you sit within your office or your few offices and you have these things with these direct links, you know, and you've got good firewalls, you're safe. But as you know, we're now in the era of distributed work, right? So John Kindervag, what he said was, you know, you cannot say trust in network packets internal and do not trust network packets from the external. You should not trust any network packet all the time. So what does that really mean? It means you're transforming your security from network security to a focus on users, applications, and data.
Right.
So what's underpinning that? Let's talk about it. Users, user awareness and training, you know, making sure that people understand that, you know, wherever they are at any time, being aware of the surroundings, there's physical security, right? Making sure that their desktop, it's a small thing, big one, because we all travel, we use. So training and awareness is huge because 95% of security incidents happen through people. Year after year, I've been tracking this stat, right? Now, data. Data, we all understand, but the point I'm trying to make is, if you really want to protect data and make sure that people have, as you said, the minimum necessary access across the ecosystem or the just-in-time access, you need to really understand your business process with the suppliers, with you know, different departments, so that you can design the correct access control schemes for that data. Because when you do that, then you're better able to implement zero trust, right? And then last but not the least, the applications, making sure that all the applications that you have are tied into your identity management framework so that you can have automated provisioning and deprovisioning, one click, et cetera, because it's a little bit more challenging with suppliers and partners, I know that, but that's a level of commitment that you need to make. To me, zero trust is even more than that because it's about a culture change in the company.
Right.
It's not a technology, it's a plethora of technologies working together, right, to the philosophy of identity, interoperability, and insights, and automation all together. So it's a lot more than what people think. And actually, if you come to my talk at 11 a.m. today, I'll talk a little bit more about that, Scott. No, open invitation.
I definitely like how you broke it down on those different levels, because I feel like it's not just a technology approach, right? And I always feel that's the one thing that a lot of organizations are faced with is they try to solve too much with technology sometimes, and processes and people's commitment to the solution are just as important. So you talked a little bit about data, and I know you kind of published something and talking about data sovereignty. What does data sovereignty mean?
So data sovereignty is the notion at two levels. One at the corporate level based on regulations, meaning that if your organization working in your based in Europe, you need to make sure that the data that you protect for your company folks is portable, that wherever they are, you need to be compliant. For example, if you're a European company, right, you need to make sure that irrespective of where they are, you need to protect their personal data.
Right.
At the same point in time, data sovereignty also empowers, you know, the world citizens or corporate citizens the ability to request control of their own data. Like, for example, GDPR's right to be forgotten.
Right.
They can request it, right? So that's it, you know, sort of the two sides of that particular coin. And the reason it's very, very important nowadays, because as you probably aware, GDPR, if there's a privacy breach, you're liable to up to 4% of the revenue. Minimum fine is 20 million euros. But not only that, double jeopardy is in effect. Because, you know, one of the many people who are breached or all of them could file, you know, file a class action or individually. So the stakes are very, very high. And I think this brings more into focus the very mission critical nature of zero trust. Because as we spoke earlier, zero trust and identity taken together and some elements of software defined perimeter can help protect the data very, very well.
Right. So you're affiliated with Netskope, right? That's where you work, correct? And Netskope is more of a data loss prevention type solution or approach. Is that correct?
I would say, well, thank you. Of course, yes. Netskope does do data loss prevention, but it's a lot more than that. So let me try to break down for you at a high level the different components of value proposition of Netskope. First of all, Netskope is a zero trust platform.
Okay.
For sure. And so therefore, you can do the many things that you're familiar with zero trust, the anytime, anywhere, authorized access, right? There's that. Secondly, it is actually a SASE company. And recently, it has been identified as a top SASE company by both Gartner and Forrester. So that's a big thing.
Right.
But also, they're big in network observability as well, right? So those are three main areas. So in the past, till about a week or two ago, they were more sort of relevant in data in transit because of the platform, right?
Right.
But very recently, they have bought a new company called Dasera for data at rest. So now they've become a really holistic player across all those dimensions. And that's not all of it. They were also appointed as selected as one of the top 10 most powerful cybersecurity companies. So that's a tremendous achievement. The thing I like with Netskope is, you know, the people and the culture is so progressive and so positive, and they focus on innovation to continue to move forward. The thing that I neglected to mention, they are the first company that embraced AI to harness all those technologies more effectively. Okay. And especially in the arena of network observability, that's a very huge advantage because, as you know, currently pre-AI, many of the companies' security teams are overloaded with alerts and, you know, chasing that tail, right?
Right?
And especially as we transmute from the old sort of castle and moat, few data center approach, provisioning cloud applications and so on. What is a network? It's anywhere, right?
Right, right.
And you need to be able to manage that. So a solid observability platform can not only provide you rich insights in real time to mitigate the risk, but also initiate workflows and automation to help minimize enterprise risk. Does that help?
No, that does explain a lot. So one of the curiosities I have in general as far as data management, I know especially a lot of large organizations that haven't really looked at managing their data, you know, up to a certain point. So there's a huge lift for some of these companies to figure out how to wrap their head around, well, what data do they care about? I mean, usually when there's compliance-driven things, those pieces are easy, but there's more value to other data that they're not considering or even aware of. Sometimes, you know, when they go through this journey of managing their data, they discover a lot more. How does your solution make it easy for them to adopt this approach or this basically solution to trying to solve that problem with their own data?
Right. So I think to just introduce the subject in another way.
Okay.
As you asked me earlier, I was a CISO, what advice can I share? So as a CISO, I start always my security planning program with the enterprise risk assessment, right?
Right.
Identifying the key risks and going back to the upper management to get support, right? But then, you know, they don't understand that by itself. So I came up with what I call the triad model.
Okay.
Okay, let me explain. So T is technology and keeping abreast of the technology curve and making sure how can you mitigate risk. An example being moving away from classical VPN for zero trust network access or embracing network observability or zero trust or whatever it is, right? So that's a constant thing. And you and I both understand that. But what is R? R is a regulatory compliance. It's risk management. And above all, cyber resilience. I is identity. A is access management. And D is data protection, right? But not so to get directly to your point, I guess what the platform allows you to do, especially with the new acquisition, is the ability to, first of all, in transit, using AI and everything, inspecting the data and making decisions based on what it does. But even more importantly now, with the new acquisition, it allows you to do that on-premise as well, data at rest, because depending on the industry, you still have a lot of data in there.
Right.
But no platform, however good it is enough because you cannot do set it and forget it, right?
Right.
The first thing you need to have is an information classification policy driven with the business, right? And then you need to do data characterization governance with the platform, right, at the end of the day. Data characterization, I should say, which whether it's in transit or the ability to scan your data in real time and identify risks, like, for example, data stores that are unprotected,
right,
with bad access and alerting you so you can fix it, right? And particularly with AI, drive it forward. But that being said, data governance is even more important because it's not just the technology. the people and process has to power that whole thing. And you got to keep working with the internal partners, namely no particular order, legal, HR, internal audit, to make sure to close the loop. And the thing is, when a platform provides you real-time visibility of your risk posture, right, with the observability concepts, it's an easier road to navigate.
Yeah, you kind of have to have all those kind of pieces working together, right?
Right.
And so then it's kind of really up to the leadership to kind of drive that ship in that direction.
Yeah. Well, one of my personal philosophies, in addition to the power of federations, I'm an immigrant, right? So I have a phrase that says, stamp your visa to success. Okay. So it's visible, illustrative, simple, and actionable.
I like that.
So to close the loop on an earlier conversation, the platform allows one to do all those things and empower CISOs to be proactive and their teams as well.
That's fascinating. So when you look at, with your experience and the things you've tried to solve and the solutions and things, with today's day and age in cybersecurity, what do you think is kind of a leading risk or something that you think about, especially as a leader, that you know that you'll either need to address in the near future, or things that aren't being addressed that should be addressed today?
I would say AI is an enabler. It could be a friend. It could also be a foe. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I came to the United States all those years ago, the very first semester, though I was in chemical engineering, I could take one elective class. I took a class on AI. So I've been a fan of AI since back in the day, right?
I think a lot of people don't realize AI has kind of been around a long time. Just the compute didn't exist, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. The platform wasn't so powerful. So I'm a big believer in the potential of AI. But what I think, people need to understand is that just as we talk about data, the characterization and governance is very, very important for AI. So you got to start with a policy. We need to possibly, to the extent you can, treat it like a program, right? In bite-sized chunks, make sure that you're going to manage the risks. Because I heard a story about a particular system that was deployed, and then as a recruitment system that screened out certain classes of candidates. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because there was bias in the system. It doesn't matter where it got there, but right, that bias needs to be neutralized. And so if you just deploy AI blindly, it can happen. So I think, obviously, you can't manage every element of AI. There's got to be some level of supervised AI that needs to happen. So that's one risk. The other risk that I really think people don't think enough about is IoT, because an organization called Statista says there'll be, like, I think 75 billion IoT devices by 2025, if I remember correct. And that's spanning all walks of life,
yeah,
right? And people just don't think enough about that. I think the risks are huge. I mean, I've heard stories about TV actually snooping a particular device, recording a conversation, emailing it to contacts. That's at a personal level. In a doctor's office you go, they connect it if the safeguards aren't there. So I think IoT people need to embrace it, especially in the arena of manufacturing, right? Because in the manufacturing arena, sometimes IT is the organization, OT is the organization. They don't always collaborate and they don't have the appropriate visibility. So I think people need to understand the IoT is the new Wild West.
Right. And that was something that, so I have previous military background and I also did work in the energy space. So when it came to like OT and that whole area, there's always a challenge that I had to help solve or at least assist with. And it's really interesting when you think about cyber attacks in general. I feel like once they become more kinetic, and that's what OT really enables a lot of these cyber attacks to do, it becomes a bigger problem that people then understand the severity that they don't quite sometimes grasp today when it's just talking about data and things they don't tangibly touch. So,
no, that's a good point. And so actually, as a CISO, right, whether it's IT, OT, you own the risk irrespective. So back to the relationship component, you got to go out there and build your relationships with the people so that you and your teams can partner with them. But, we talk a lot about IT assets, right? Classical IT assets, patch management, number of laptops, number of mobile devices. But, hey, I have news, right? You've got to embrace the same and you've got to have an IoT dynamic discovery and characterization platform that can identify what you have, shine the light into those nooks and crannies, but also raise to you alerts like, they could be ransomware or they could be whatever, right? And make sure that those are identified. So definitely, I think I don't want to mention any platform in particular, but it's become almost a necessity now in the manufacturing arena. You've got to have a platform like that that can go out in real time, shine a light on all your IoT devices as they are plugged into the network, any IP connected device, and determine the risk posture so you can do something about it, right? So I think that's important. People haven't, in all organizations, realized, you know, that they have, because you can't manage that by spreadsheet. It's out of date almost, you know, in a day or two, especially as companies embrace digital manufacturing, all the sensors, all the devices to, you know, drive manufacturing efficiency and productivity and predictive analytics. You know, the scale and pace of change and, you know, adoption of IoT in manufacturing is huge, as an example.
So if you were to leave kind of a word of advice to people in general, either trying to break into the field or get to the level kind of where you sit, what would be kind of like your lasting remarks as far as things they should think about or, you know, goals they should set?
So the first thing is, you know, whether you're a university student, as you progress in your career, identify mentors, right?
That's good.
For sure, you know, and so you say, okay, Arun, that's fine. How do you do it? Well, you sort of start building a network early, right? And asking. One way to do that is, even if you're a student, joining the local chapter of the Cloud Security Alliance or the ISACA, or, you know, or the ISC2, and going there and, you know, making friends, if you will. And, you know, some, by just sheer nature, somebody will, you know, build a friendship with you, or you'll build a friendship with them, or they'll introduce you to someone, right? And it'll also teach you a very valuable life skill, building relationships early in your career. So that's number one. And number two is, you know, really, cybersecurity is not, I got a certificate today or a degree today. You've got to keep learning across your life, right? That's two. Three, I think definitely certification is important. Now, I know that, for example, people say you should get a CISSP, but as you and I both know, CISSP, you have to have 5 years of experience. So I was very happy to see that the ISC2 has come out with a new certification called Certified in Cybersecurity. If you pass the exam, you get it. Now, obviously, it's not the same thing as CISSP, right? But if you're a student, if you're new in a career, you can show the commitment to your company. Look, I have knowledge.
Right.
And if you want to be a little bit more ambitious, well, in a little bit of time, you can probably study for the Certificate of Cloud Security Knowledge, which, again, is free except for the exam and things of that. These are just examples, right? And the fourth and last thing I would say is that folks have to actually give back to the profession, right? Because you, whatever part of your career you're in, there's opportunities for you to contribute, whether it's writing a research paper or being on a panel or whatever, to the extent you can. So those would be my advice to people.
I love all those. And I also love the fact that we started our conversation talking about relationships and the significance of those. And then your kind of last remarks kind of ends on how significant that is. And everything you had to say about that, I thought was great, because I've always strived, one, to meet new people, because I feel like I learn a lot just by meeting people in general. But two, this is why I love this career so much, is there's always something to learn. So I feel like if I don't make myself feel stupid during the day, then I didn't try hard enough to learn something new, kind of thing. So I'm always challenging myself that way. But I really want to thank you for your time. This has been a great conversation. So I really appreciate you talking with us and sharing some of your insights, Arun. This has been a great discussion. So I hope our listeners enjoyed it, and just want to tell everyone happy hunting.
Thank you, Scott. A pleasure.
Absolutely.